Hi, welcome to Whiskey Cask, the Cask Strength Podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 95 for the weekend of June 10th, 2007, on location at the Brandy Library in New York City. Coming up in a few minutes...
I've become more of a purist, and caramel coloring is just to be consistent in color. There's no reason for that, and chill filtration strips out probably just about 20 to 40% of the oils out of the whiskey, which makes the whiskey stable, but you're taking a lot of the flavor away.
That's Steve Fox of Price Imports, the U.S. importer for Benriach, and we'll talk about the Benriach finished series of whiskeys in a few minutes. First, though, let's look at the news. Now, how much would you pay for a bottle of 50-year-old Macallan in a Lalique crystal decanter? A Toronto man paid $10,000 for just such a bottle at Park Avenue Liquors in New York the other day.
Young guy, well-dressed, came in, knew exactly what he wanted, took one look at it, and his eyes sort of lit up. Then he started rolling his eyes, trying to figure out how he was going to get this back to Canada. He knew he was going to have a hard time getting it onto the airplane. Started worrying about it leaking in cargo hold, and he just then and there decided that he was just going to drive that package back to Canada. He's going to rent a car and drive it back like a baby and carry it across the border.
Now, you still have one of these available, right?
Yes, it's right here on the shelf.
It's the Lalique Crystal, the $10,000 Macallan?
Yep, the Lalique Crystal, yep.
Did he say why he was buying this?
He indicated that it was going to be for his son.
That's Jonathan Goldstein of Park Avenue. And there's one thing you ought to know. It turns out that the gentleman doesn't even have a baby on the way yet. He may not have one for a long while after his wife finds out how much he paid for that bottle of whiskey. In other news, the Scottish island of Lewis could have its first legal distillery in about 200 years soon. The place has been filled with illicit stills for many, many years until just a few years ago. But entrepreneur Mark Taborn wants to create the first legal distillery there. He's hoping to take the peated water of Uig and make the first Lewis malt whiskey in a long time. We'll keep you posted. Coming up on the calendar of events, the Taste of Dublin Festival is this coming weekend in Dublin. The Kentucky Bourbon Festival holds its Frankfurt Sampler on June 16th in Frankfort, Kentucky. John Hansel of Malt Advocate magazine hosts a single malt dinner at the Farmhouse in Emmaus, Pennsylvania on June 22nd. And the Wild Scotsman Whiskey Society holds a tasting with Julian Van Winkle at Nicholson's Tavern in Cincinnati on June 27th. Of course, you can find a complete calendar for worldwide whiskey events at the WhiskeyCast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. Benriach Distillery in Speyside has been around for decades, and it's regarded as one of Scotland's more underrated whiskies. That's because most of its output has gone to the blenders for years, first under the corporate control of Seagram's, then Pernod Ricard. But Billy Walker bought the distillery a few years ago, found some casks of some really good single malt, and since then, it's been a wonderful addition to the single malt market. Benriach's finished range is out now with four whiskies. I talked with Price Imports' Steve Fox about it at the Brandy Library earlier this evening.
Billy Walker loves to do what he calls finishes with his different styles of whiskeys. So these started off for 12 years in used American bourbon cask, and then he did the last 3 years approximately. There's actually four of them, but I have three of them here tonight in various different types of wood. So we have a dark rum cask, which I believe came from Jamaica. Then we have a Madeira cask, and then we have a Pedro Jimenez sherry cask.
How do these compare to the regular unfinished Benriach?
Well, when you're adding another flavor to it, you know, you're talking about a classic style Speyside, and then adding another dimension to it and adding another flavor to it. So you're going to get the subtleness and you know, it's a real light, subtle effect from the rum cask to a more sweet. And you're going to get a lot of sweetness in the Madeira, and then you get the sweetness and a lot of the wine sherry flavor from the Pedro Jimenez cask.
Okay. So what do you want to start with?
We'll start with the rum cask right here. And if you notice, the color is very fairly light on this cask. When I started working with Benriach about 4 years ago, and he was interviewing importers. The first thing I went to Alistair Walker, Billy's son, as I said, if you're going to do business with Bryce Imports, the one thing that I request is no chill filtration and no caramel coloring. And he looks at me and kind of scratches his head and goes, well, we always chill filter and add caramel coloring. We're at 86 proof, you know? And I said, well, if you're going to do business with Bryce Imports and you pick S as your importer, you won't do that or I won't be your importer. I'll take that into consideration. So he came back to us and he says, well, we decided to use Bryce Imports as the importer. And we're going to go by your method. And I took that theory from a distillery that's never done that for 180 years, which is Springbank, which we're also the importer for. And I've become over the years, been doing this many years, is I've become more of a purist. And caramel coloring is just to be consistent in color. There's no reason for that. And chill filtration strips out probably about 20 to 40% of the oils out of the whiskey, which makes whiskey stable, but you're taking a lot of the flavor away. Why would you want to take flavor away from a wonderful product?
Which, of course, is the traditional way to do things.
Correct. But the big boys want to, you know, bring it down to, you know, 80 or 86 proof, which the only way to stabilize the whiskey is by chill filtration, or it turns cloudy in color.
Which, of course, we don't like.
Absolutely.
Okay, so this is the dark rum finish, correct?
Yes.
Okay. What am I going to find when I taste this?
You know, it's... you're still getting really, it's not overpowering in rum. It's, you know, because it is a dark rum, I thought it would have more influence. Like, I've had some Springbank rum casks, which, you know, I got a lot more of that sweetness in the dark rum flavor, which I'm not getting in this. I'm still getting a lot of the real heavy sweetness and from the natural maltiness of the whiskey. So it's like a real subtle sweetness from the rum.
Which is what I'm getting when I nose this. I get the maltiness.
Right.
I get the smokiness. Right. Now, the question I have is, we talk a lot about wine finishes versus spirit finishes, between wine finishes and a rum finish.
Right.
How does that affect it, the difference between, say, finishing it in a wine cask and finishing it in a rum cask? Is there a big difference, since rum is traditionally a lot stronger?
Well, I mean, think about it. It started off in a spirit cask, being a used American bourbon cask. So it went from a spirit cask to a spirit cask, instead of from a spirit cask to a wine cask. So you're just keeping it in the same type of rum's a lot higher in alcohol than bourbon. But it came from an alcohol cask, it's not going to make a drastic difference in any aspect. You might pull a lot more of the tannins and a lot of the vanilla and the toasty walnut flavors that you're going to get out of a cask are probably going to be stripped away coming from a rum cask. Generally, rums, you know, 140, 160 proof. So you're going to strip a lot of those flavors out of it because of the high alcohol from the rum cask. So you're going to get less of an influence of that almond vanilla flavor, which you traditionally get in a normal cask.
I don't get any vanilla in this, but I am getting that good rum essence, a little bit of smokiness, which, even though it's not really peated at all, you still get the rum smokiness in it.
Right, yeah. I mean, Benriach, like most Speyside whiskeys, use a tiny bit of peat, but very, 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 very little peat in their drying.
This is good. Very good. It's just, I get, and even though I know there's no caramel coloring in here, I get a taste of caramel in here, of a caramel candy type taste in here, and a nice little smoky finish with a nice little kick at the end.
You know, that caramely color is going to actually come from the rum itself.
Right, I get the taste of it, not the
right,
color.
Right, exactly. Because, you know, rum is distilled from molasses.
Right.
Caramel coloring comes from molasses.
Right.
So that's...
So it's perfectly natural that you would get this in a rum finish.
Very good. That's a good way of depicting that out perfectly. And the thing with Billy's been doing this a long, long time. You know, he used to be partners in Bern Stewart, and Billy doesn't like to overpower his whiskeys. Like, you know, he feels, you know, 2 to 3 years is about right to add just a little bit of flavor without overpowering it. Some distilleries, which I won't mention, that does a lot of these flavorings, will put it for 2 to 3 months. But, you know, and you know, you get these high ratings, like, you know, man, this has just got this radical Madeira or claret or whatever other flavor in it. And you wonder why these people have this imagination. because it's only been in that for a couple months. It's taken 2 to 3 years to get this, I think it's considered well balanced.
It's almost like just waving it past a barrel and calling it a finish.
Right. I mean, there's tricks at doing that too, because when you're taking a, hypothetically, to say a fresh port cask, you know, and you accidentally left too much port in it, you can prematurely age it and give it that port flavor. Yeah, let's say we forgot to empty out those last 5 gallons of port in there. You know, oops.
And in reality, it takes a couple of years to get that good balance into a finish. You can't just do it with a 6 month to 12 month exposure to this, to a rum barrel.
Well, some of these guys literally are 2 to 3 months. So not even 6 months to 12. So, but yes, it does take 2 to 3 years. Billy's, you know, got this about 2.5 years on the average is where he likes it at.
So let's move on to the Madeira next, right?
Yes.
And these are all 15 years old.
Correct. 12 plus 3.
So they spent 12 years in the bourbon cask, 3 years in,
correct,
in this case, a Madeira cask.
Correct. It, approximately. It could have been like 12 and some odd months. And
but for lack of a better,
yes, exactly,
for our consider, for our terms here.
Just to simplify it, yes.
And these obviously aren't the first time we've seen a dark rum, a Madeira cask, and a Pedro Ximénez finish. But what makes these different other than the 3 years of maturation?
Well, you know, you're talking there again, it's the style of the individual distillery. Every distillery has got its own unique flavor. The first distillery, to the best of my knowledge, that's ever used a rum cask was Springbank. And that was done in the late 1980s. And actually, when Springbank released it, they happened to release it right around St. Paddy's Day. And the press started looking at it, and everybody said it had a green haze to it. So everybody called it the Irish whiskey. I mean, you know, they said they did it for St. Paddy's Day. But it just, the rum just tight, and for some reason, turned it into a slight greenish tint, which is kind of unusual. But that was, you know, pure natural color with what Springbank did. So there's very few people I know that have really done a rum finish.
Now, with this one, this is a little lighter than the sherry finish, the Pedro Ximénez. A little darker, it seems to me, just looking at it in this light, than the rum finish. This, of course, is not the world's greatest light in this dark room either.
There again, you know, this is a dark rum cask. So it could have been like a, you know, like for example, the Appleton Dark or some kind of a Myers, some kind of a really heavily molasses rum that's almost black in color. So you're going to get that color, get that depiction of color from what was in there before, where you're not going to get as heavy a color out of the Madeira cask as you did the rum.
You get almost a reddish color.
Right. Where as we go on to the next one, you'll really see a reddish color.
You definitely get the Madeira flavor present in that. You get a more of a wine finish in this than the other one.
And it's got a really, really nice sweetness that it adds to it. You know, a lot tonight we tasted several people on this, and you know, all the ladies are coming up to, well, you know, what's the easiest one to drink? And I was giving them the Madeira because I thought the sweetness would be the easiest one for them to accept. And I think I was right.
This has a good mouthfeel, too. It just sort of lingers on the tongue a little bit and just sort of... to me, it sort of raises the taste buds a little bit and just keeps them going with a finish that even 20, 30 seconds later is still going on.
Yeah, it has picked up the flavors really, you know, so it's not, you know, just catching the front of your palate, but it is lingering on to the back of your palate and rolling on and lasting.
I get that finish curling up the back of the throat a little bit, too.
Right. And it just, I think they did a very wonderful job and balancing that out. So there again, I don't think it's overpowering in the Madeira because that maltiness is still there. You know, you haven't lost that traditional Scotch flavor, but just enhanced it with some extra flavors.
That's what I get here. I still get the good traditional classic Scotch whiskey taste with just that little extra touch that makes it interesting.
Yes, I agree 100%.
Okay, and... let's move on to the Pedro Ximénez. This looks like almost like a chocolate whiskey at the coloring on this.
And look at you know, and there again, that's only 3 years. Now, these all started off fairly light in color, like, you traditionally see in a bourbon cask. And this is just what the sherry, the redness of the sherry cask really pulls out. Now, this is obviously, being that it's this dark, you know, it's obviously a first fill sherry cask. So you're going to get a lot of color out of it real quick. If you use a second or third fill, it'd be lighter than this. So this is going to depict, you know, you're going to get a really a good, heavy sherry influence to this. But there again, it's not overpowering. You know, like Macallan is 100% sherry cask. You know, people like Macallan like sherry. You know, and it's to me, it's almost overpowering in sherry because it's 100% sherry. But that's a style that people really appreciate. This is kind of like not losing the style of your Speyside whiskey, but just complementing it with a little bit of the sherry flavor.
Looking at this, the color I get is a really a dark gold. If I had to compare this, it would almost be in the range of, say, maybe like a 10-weight motor oil in that color, sort of like the honey color of brand-new motor oil, just a nice, dark, rich color, very thick. And the taste? Once again, that's a really good balance between the sherry and the ex-bourbon cask without being overpowering. I know that, as you mentioned, with Macallan's and some other heavily sherry-matured whiskeys, you get that sherry taste in there that just sort of explodes in your mouth. This is a little more subtle.
Oh, by the way, I just want to clarify that you meant the motor oil to be the color, not the flavor.
No, of course, the color. I've used that term just sort of in a term that most people would understand when they change the oil in their car or something like that, but the taste is wonderful.
No, I know. I felt a little sense of humor in there. So
that would not be the first time I've had that comparison.
There again, I really, and this is where I give all the credit to the person that came up and decided to do the styles and aged this, watch these barrels year after year after year. He could have bottled these after 13 or 14. He found it that he really thought these kind of peaked out at 15 years. And I have to give the credit to Billy Walker for this. And Billy is very creative. He's very talented. He's a skilled still master. And actually, it's more not really a still master, but, you know, kind of almost being a mixologist with barrels.
Now, what's the fourth one in the finish series?
Tawny Port. And unfortunately, we had a couple hiccups tonight where these only came into New York 2 days ago, and the wholesaler had it in the wrong bin and pulled it 3 times wrong for me. So, unfortunately, the fourth one won't be available tonight for us to try.
Now, what is the difference in taste between these and, say, the Curiositas and the Authenticus?
Well, it goes back to before the Walker family with other partners bought Benriach from Pernod Ricard. Pernod Ricard bought the distillery from Seagram's. Seagram's 20-plus years ago, about 22 years ago, was worried that Islay whiskeys were going to disappear. Benriach is one of the main whiskeys that goes into Chivas. Now, they said, well, you know, if all of a sudden we lose Ardbeg, Laphroaig, and, you know, all these different islets start shutting down, we need that real smoky flavor, because there's a bit of that smoky flavor that goes into Chivas like most blends. So they decided to do some experimenting. They're the only ones that ever done this, and does a heavily peated Speyside, and they wanted to see what it was like in case they lost all the Islay whiskeys. To say Islay floated into the sea one day, so they can at least have some backup and not lose their style of Chivas. And what happened was, when they sold it to Pernod Ricard, these experimental casks, like they had some new Scottish Oak casks that are 25 years old now, and these experimental casks that Springbank had sat in a back corner of one of the warehouses, and they never did anything with it. You know, it's kind of like a laboratory where, you know, you kind of put it into the back of the refrigerator and just leave it there forever. Well, you know, Seagram's is so large, they, you know, a few casks just to be buried in a warehouse is no big deal for them.
It's a loss of just a ledger on the inventory ledger somewhere.
Correct. And when Billy went through there, you know, he saw these weird marked casks, saw these weird markings in the ledger. Nobody knew what the hell it was, because Pernod Ricard had no idea what Seagram's was doing. And so Billy had the option, when he was buying all the casks from Pernod Ricard, to sample and buy off as many casks as he wanted. So he went and sampled thousands of barrels and found these and just said, hey, whoa, these things are like incredible. And that's how, you know, he came in and he just couldn't believe it. So, you know, curiosity with the peat, seeing them, you know, curious how Highland thing, that's how Curiositas came along. And Authenticus is authentic, so, you know, it's some Latin words. And
Authenticus is what you would normally get Benriach, 12 to 15 to 18 years old, in ex-bourbon.
Correct. And then, you know, heavily repeating it over 21 years, you got Authenticus. So it's some interesting things that Sebum did for an experiment. And we're reaping the benefits. I mean, people absolutely love it. And, you know, it's there's a lot of great space sides out there, but, you know, space sides are all, you know, classic in style unless you're doing something with adding a flavor to them to, you know, pump them up, bring them a little bit more interest to them.
Of course, you'll find a link to the Benriach website at WhiskeyCast.com. That's all for this episode of WhiskeyCast. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. Don't forget, I'm still collecting questions for that question and answer episode coming up a few weeks from now. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2007. Normally, it comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. Tonight, it's coming to you from the Brandy Library in New York City. You'll also find a link to the Brandy Library's website at WhiskeyCast.com. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.